stay on message.
All right, we're back on the record. Mr. Simster, anything else from NSP before we move on to advocacy staff?
Not at this time, Your Honor.
All right. And Mr. Hsu, before you call your first witness, up front we agreed to the admission of the advocacy staff exhibits. There's exhibits 1 through 18. I believe everybody has a copy of those, and there is an exhibit list. With those exhibits, I don't think we need to go through each of those at this time. But so if you're ready to call your first witness, go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to defer the opening to witness Michael Diller.
Okay.
Mr. Diller, before you begin, would you like to make any changes to the record?
Hang on. Should we get him sworn in, or are you?
I'm sorry.
Details. Sir. Mr. Diller, I'm required to give you an oath, advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It's a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine, $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Hsu.
All right, Mr. Diller, do you have any corrections you need to make to the record before we begin?
Yes, just a couple. On my direct filed testimony, if you would turn to page 11, so that would be Exhibit 17. On line 16, the word decline. Oh, wait a minute. Exhibit 17, page 11. Line 16. I would like to add a comma after, on line 15, a comma after deficiencies, and another comma after raise, and change the decline on line 16 to improve, so that now it will read, the solar efficiencies will continue to improve as the solar industry matures. You know, and while we have Exhibit 17 out, I'd just like to say that when I wrote my testimony, there was a time lapse between when I wrote my testimony and when I made copies for all these exhibits. And in the meantime, MISO's business manual was updated. And so there's a lot of citations referring to the MISO business practice manual, and some of those page numbers have changed. I don't really feel the need to go through that unless the commissioners or Mr. Simster would like me to, but
we're fine moving on, and we just acknowledge that the references to the MISO business practice manual are those as in the advocacy staff's exhibits.
Okay. The only other thing I'd mention then in regard to that is the cone prices are different, but it doesn't really change anything from big scheme of things. So the other change I'd like to make is on Exhibit 18, page 3, on line 24, I see that I didn't spell out OMG. And so I wanted to put in front of OMG, oh my goodness, and then parentheses around OMG. I didn't want my parents to read that and think I was using the Lord's name in vain.
So it's always good to spell out acronyms.
That concludes my corrections.
Like LOL.
Go ahead. Okay. First, I'd just like to thank the commission for this opportunity to provide testimony in this case. A lot of times I don't have access to you because of the Chinese wall that's erected. I'm always representing advocacy staff, and there's always this concern about ex parte, and so it makes it difficult sometimes for me to communicate all the ideas that I might have for the commission. This is my chance. When I get in front of you in this chair. And so I'd like to thank you for that. North Dakota has a rich heritage of balanced budgets, sensible government, even rational commissioners, and least cost planning for electric rates they oversee. I have enjoyed the banter back and forth with Mr. Hager, and no more than when I started, and due in part to his work. And Brian, Commissioner Kalk, I would just like to say that sometimes I don't see the wisdom in your questioning until I have further time to reflect. And I'd like to set up my opening comments by going back to North Dakota reliability that you talked about, because I think that gives us a good framework for this discussion this afternoon. As you recall, you spearheaded that effort, Mr. Kalk, and at the time I thought maybe you had gone off the rail a little bit, and again, as it turned out, you had not, and it was a great direction that you provided. If you remember, we ordered NSP to replace a lot of the underground cable that had it tended to default, and so we ordered that. We ordered smart switches, which I think may have been the first deployed in NSP's system. We ordered another tree trimming crew, an electrical engineer. I don't think they had an electrical engineer on staff in North Dakota, and tasked with improving reliability. We ordered it. And we paid for it. We paid for all of it. It was our initiative, our need. We benefited from it, and it was our expense. we also included kind of a carrot and stick, or mostly carrot, I guess it was. We set a standard for the average minutes of, it's called SAIDI, System Average Interruption Duration Index. We set a standard at 57, and if you remember, while we haggled over that, the company said they could never do better than 58 point something, and staff said, yes, you can. You can do it. You can get it down to 57, and they just reported their earnings reports, just showed the SAIDI results for last year, and they came in at 57.1. So NSP, in effect, was right. They couldn't get down to 57. But we were also right in that they could beat 58 point whatever it was. I only bring that up to point out and to show that when you have two opposing forces like we have today in this hearing, that we can come up with some pretty good end results. And I think that we did a great job of setting that standard. I even feel a little bad that they barely missed the mark. But not so much because the ratepayers today will not have to pony up $1.5 million for that extra tenth of a minute. So now to my opening comments. In the simplest of terms, NSP does not need additional generation facilities until 2024, yet this ADP proposal would add generation supplies by the end of 2016. The projected cost of energy from the solar portfolio is expensive in comparison to other intermittent resources familiar to the Commission, and expensive in comparison to market-priced energy, current and forecasted. If the solar portfolio is added, NSP estimates it will add $14 million of cost to its total system costs. If natural gas prices remain low, the solar portfolio will add $43 million to NSP's total system costs. Of course, the costs could be even higher if excess electric generation is being built to prematurely reduce or eliminate coal-fired generation facilities that are currently working and producing low-cost energy for NSP's customers. Because generation capacity is not needed until 2024, and because adding capacity in 2016 adds to the total system costs, Staff recommends that this ADP application be denied. Further, because capacity is not needed, North Dakota ratepayers should not be saddled with a capacity proxy price for the unneeded generation capacity until such capacity is needed. Advocacy staff looks forward to the day when solar energy is cost-effective. We remain agnostic to the type of generation resource used, yet remain faithful to least cost planning for the ratepayers of North Dakota. While the impact of this may be small, staff is asking the commission to put a stake in the ground so that neither NSP or the Minnesota PUC is confused about our desire for least cost planning. We are requesting denial of ADP not only for this case, but the cases that follow. This case, this impact may be small, but it will set the stage for the future. Our states, both Minnesota and North Dakota, our states' policies will continue to diverge, making this policy decision critical for North Dakota interests in the long term. It is definitely not a small decision. And that concludes my opening statement.
Mr. Simpson?
No questions, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We don't have any questions.
Commissioner Kalk?
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mike. So Excel gave you a pass, huh, Mike? You've already duked it back and forth in your buttle and rebuttal and everything. So you didn't think I was very wise back before, but now it's okay.
I apologize.
I recall your testimony back then as well. Anyway, Mike, you queued up, I guess. One of the questions I asked the company earlier today, is there a optimal size to build solar? And where I was going with that is that when we built the coal plants back in the day, they didn't need 500 megawatts of generation, but that was the size to build. What would happen if somebody came? How would you view if Xcel came in and they said, we're going to build a 500-megawatt coal plant, and we don't need 500 megawatts, but it doesn't make sense to build a 100-megawatt coal plant. Would you then be just saying the same thing, that they shouldn't build a 500-megawatt coal plant because they don't need all that power now? How would we deal with that?
The way you deal with it is it's exactly what Mr. Hager does day in and day out. The integrated resource plan is the tool that you use to determine whether or not 500-megawatt coal plant is better than building 500-megawatt gas turbines or 200 megawatts.
I'm not explaining it correct. Whether it's coal or gas or whatever, if the optimal size of building something means you're going to have to build more generation than you really need right now, would you always be against that? They should just build to what they think they should need in the near term?
Yeah, I think maybe we're passing in the night here. The economic model. Game show. This is like a game show. The economic model called Strategist, it takes into consideration the sizes and the costs of all the available resources. I guess maybe I can cut to your question of.
I guess what I'm trying to get to. Like you said, we're not communicating, perhaps. Would you always be against overbuilding for generation, even if that was the best size fit? If your decision was...
No, let me try it this way. I would not always be against overbuilding or building more generation than is absolutely necessary. And I think I laid that out in... Was it my direct testimony? And I gave an example of there could be a situation where, right now we know wind energy can be had for 3 cents, 3.5 cents, somewhere in that area. And if that replaces legacy plants that just the fuel cost alone to run a combustion turbine is 5 cents, And you can replace 5 cent fuel with 3 cent all in energy, yeah, you would secure more than you need because it's least cost planning, right? So you would There can be situations where you would acquire more capacity.
Okay, then tell me what's the difference in how you're viewing this, because they're building more generation than they need right now. What would be different in that scenario than this scenario, just your cost estimate of it?
Absolutely. It adds cost to the total system. The scenario I just gave you
reduces
lowers
the cost.
Total cost to the system. And so, yeah, that's the difference.
Okay. Just to clarify that. And then what you were talking, your beginning comments about, I just drew a blank here, maybe I'll circle back around here. I'm going to come back to my question. I want to make sure I shape it up correctly.
Okay.
Hold that thought. I'm good. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Okay, so let's see here where to start. One of the in their rebuttal testimony, in Mr. Hager's rebuttal testimony, he talked about some of the other reasons beyond need that we should be factoring in on our decision for this, and one of them was the being part of an integrated system, the economies of scale, all the benefits we get from that. I know you talked some about that in your sur rebuttal, but talk today a little bit about what your thoughts are on the benefits that North Dakota has in being part of this system and supporting some things that maybe aren't our idea or aren't necessarily needed right now but are modest in price and might have some benefits longer term to us. What are your thoughts on those qualitative benefits?
One thing I can say right up front, Commissioner Fedorchuk, is that the advocacy staff does not want to push the company into some kind of big company restructure. We don't want our own company in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. There's benefits, there's value to being part of a large company and part of an integrated company. There's values there. You can cover over the more customers you have, the more states you have, the more people, the more customers that you have to spread overhead costs over. And so mm-hmm. We're not looking for that. I think it's going to be difficult for me to answer this question entirely because we've just now started going down the track of figuring out a long-term solution to the problem at hand. But I tried to lay some of that out in my sur rebuttal testimony, and the company comes across as saying you can be part of an integrated system or off with you and you're on your own and we'll build you a 10 megawatt reciprocating engine when you need it if you're lucky. I don't know that we need to go that far. I don't personally believe that, and I probably overcharacterized I have NSP's position, but I think that we can be part of an integrated system yet have different resources based on our own policies in North Dakota. So let's say, taking your example further, so let's say that we go down the road and NSP says, we need more solar. Okay, what is the cost of it? All right, it's whatever, X. Okay, what is the cost of the least expensive resource that you could deploy in North Dakota? So, we put a 10 megawatt reciprocating engine next to the CapEx line in Fargo. What's the difference in price between that and more solar that they're building to meet a mandate in Minnesota? It could be that the solar would still be cheaper. So, I mean, advocacy staff is not suggesting that North Dakota cut off its nose despite its face. We just think the company should give us a little deference, consider us like the state that we are. I said this to them yesterday. They serve four of our largest cities in North Dakota. you know, a lot of people would be really happy to do that. And so, you know, treat us like the full partner that we deserve to be. And I don't have all the answers, and neither does the company at this point. Mm-hmm. We started yesterday acknowledging that as a result of all this testimony, that my goodness, we don't need some kind of short-term solution. We need a long-term solution because our state's policies are just going to diverge further. They're not going to come together. So let's develop a solution.
Okay.
Did that answer?
Yes. Okay. I'll follow up with some other stuff that we'll get to this. So the lease, your focus on lease cost planning, give me the historical perspective on how that has been viewed industry-wide, and is there a pretty significant change occurring away from lease cost planning in your mind?
Well... I don't think there was a difference prior to maybe 10 years ago. I mean, the differences have arisen because there's different environmental policies between North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin. I mean, there's renewable objectives, there's renewable mandates, and so it requires different actions. Mm. And I think it was always least cost planning. Until just recently, now it's more of an environmental plan in some instances, which is not too long ago, NSP came in and explained to us the new direction of their most recent integrated resource plan. In fact, it is an environmental plan more than lease cost planning.
Do you think it's realistic for North Dakota to hold on to lease cost planning in this environment?
I think so. I think maybe what you're getting at is some of the there aren't any. Sometimes it's not black or white. There's a lot of gray, and Mr. Hager was good at explaining all that. Can I forecast the future any better than he can? I cannot. Mm-hmm. So, are there risks associated with us? Demanding lease cost planning, yes, there are. There are risks. Because if we get in I don't know who the next president will be. I don't know who the next EPA administrator will be. I don't know what the courts will decide when all of this 111Ds taken to court. I don't have all the answers. There are risks. But risks can be beneficial and they can be costly. And so that's part of the decision here.
So is your view that the risks of that are less than the risks of jumping into saying that this is a prudent decision to invest in the solar at this point when the capacity is needed?
Maybe if I just follow up a little more, there's lots of opportunities ahead of us. You've listened to the company talking about, I mean, I think Mr. Hager said in his rebuttal testimony, the company plans to replace 65% of its generation in the next 20 years. We got all kinds of opportunities to be part of or not part of different plans. And the beautiful thing about that, and I know you've read my testimony, is I'm convinced that if you don't have – one of the big problems with us reaching a long-term agreement is they don't have any generation assets in North Dakota. If they did, then maybe we could agree to take a bigger percentage of it here in North Dakota and they could have a bigger percentage. They don't have generation assets here. And so I make the argument that we should hold tight on capacity. We shouldn't be going along with the Minnesota Public Utility Commission that's ordering more capacity than it needs, because we need generation in the state of North Dakota if we want to have any command and control over our own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Commissioner, we have lots of opportunities ahead of us, and I believe that I believe the risks aren't that great.
All right. How about this, the company's argument that the solar investment tax credit is expiring, so now is the time to lock in affordable solar, and this is actually a hedge on potential higher prices down the line for gas or solar or whatever, I guess, any generation.
Well, first of all, the company provided me with, I think we've already included it as an exhibit or referenced it, but provided me with some information that indicated the cost declines that we can expect in the solar industry, and that's not a surprise. We've seen the same thing in our flat screen TVs and all the other gizmos that we have. And the cost declines are significant enough that you look at a 20% differential between the 30% ITC and the 10% ITC at the end, and you go, we don't need this right now. I mean, just the technology improvements over the next 5-10 years will probably cover, probably, I don't know for certain, but will likely cover that different, that 20% free money from the federal government differential. So what was the, I'm trying to remember my testimony.
No, you answered that. That was the question. Of course, the other thing that we can't predict, but we can look at past history, and they could extend that 30% investment tax credit too. There's certainly been plenty of tradition in that regard.
I agree.
As well. okay, let's see. Is there anything else that, from a consumer standpoint, that we might be missing out on if we take a pass at this? If we say, nah, we don't want to be part of it? Any benefits that you think we might...
We'd miss out on a little higher rate.
Okay. They might not object to that.
You know, if we go down the CO2 is evil and it's terrible and the federal government gets behind it, you know, could there be some benefits to being a part of this? Sure.
What about the what's your analysis of them this being a hedge on higher gas prices?
I thought Mr. Hager did a good job of explaining it. You can kind of see the development of my own knowledge as we went along. I'm likening solar to wind, for instance. Both are a hedge against natural gas, and I think he's right that solar would be a bigger hedge against natural gas because during the day when everyone needs it, needs energy, gas is providing those peak needs, and so if you have solar, it's replacing that. So I think that solar does indeed provide more of a hedge against natural gas than wind, which just blows when the wind blows. Mm-hmm. But
do you you heard my rant?
I thought it was great.
I've heard it's been named.
I think it was Zeb Simpson that was calling it the Julie rant.
Don't tell my husband you named it, please. anyway.
Not really, I don't want to cause Zeb to have a heart.
Sounded like a Mark Nesbitt type of thing to do. you kind of spoke to some of what I was getting at, too, in your opening comments, but the way in which this type of a project sort of paves the way for and further justifies backing out of coal and some of the fossil fuel resources, making them less efficient. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how you view that in terms of impact to consumers and to reliability and everything else?
I don't know if I could talk about it much more than what I've already stated in my opening comment and some of my my testimony. I can't give you solid numbers on it. It sounded like Mr. Hager was uncomfortable giving you solid numbers on it, but my simpleton common sense thinking is that if, in fact, we're going to start reducing coal generation in Minnesota, which is part of NSP's IRP, or eliminating coal-generating facilities altogether in Minnesota, I know that the energy prices of coal-generated electricity are very low. And I know what the cost of this is. And so these scenarios that we've been talking about, $14 million, $41 million, it doesn't try to capture what that cost may be. And I suspect that that cost will be much greater than what we're talking about here. But, again, that's just common sensing it. I don't have any quantitative numbers to support that.
And you touched on this a little bit in your testimony as well, but I think you said something like demand doesn't sneak up on us and, you know, yeah, there's more time. The company has argued that they might need this type of a resource to meet unexpected increases in demand that you couldn't necessarily prepare for. Do you believe that?
Maybe we could just look at page 10 on my SIR rebuttal testimony.
Let's see. Okay.
May I approach and get my exhibits back?
Yeah, go ahead.
What I tried to do is put something together that would be very useful and workable for the commission. Here's just a summary of NSP's obligations and existing resources. And so if you just look at the top line there, that's their obligations that they're forecasting for 2016 through 23. And then the next line is what they already have in place, already generating electricity. So the difference, existing capacity surplus, you can look across there and you see one number that's negative in 2020. Of course, you've already approved Black Dog, and Black Dog's supposed to come online in 2019. So basically that negative then wouldn't be negative. It'd be plus 180. You can go down a little further and look at, all right, if we did everything that the Minnesota Commission would like us to do or be a part of, they've already decided to be a part of, then that projected capacity surplus starts at 258,000 and grows to, you know, gets close to 1,000 megawatts of excess capacity. Then I provided a line, capacity surplus without any of the solar. That gives you an idea of what the projected capacity excess would be without any solar. And then the last line is basically the North Dakota plan, capacity surplus, Black Dog only. And I look across at those and I think, you know, that's a fair bit of excess capacity through 2023. I don't think we need extra solar capacity to make this a conservative plan. I think we have a conservative plan already.
And does that take into consideration the planning reserve or whatever? Is that on top of the 7%?
The planning reserve margin is part of the obligation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The top line. I took out some of that noise so that it'd be easy to see.
Okay. Going back in time, is this typical? Is this the capacity surplus that we're seeing here on the bottom? You know, what did you call the North Dakota plan? Is that generally what we would have been seeing over the last 20 years of your time here, is that a typical surplus?
Unfortunately,
or?
I've just kind of gotten into integrated resource plans in the last year or so, so I don't have a rich history of that. I'll give you just my general observations, though, that integrated resource plans are filed every 2 years, and I think there's a reason for that. Really, I mean, you heard the company talk about integrated resource plans being five-year plans. Since they're filed every 2 years, they're really two-year plans, in my opinion. And generally, companies are pretty good at following 2 years' worth of plans. Just because I've filed testimony in Thunder Spirit with Montana Dakota Utilities, I use them as an example because it's fresh in my mind. But they 2 years ago, they said we're going to build reciprocating engines out in Montana, and they're doing it. Said we're going to improve the air quality system in that coal plant in Montana, and they're doing it. They said they were going to buy 100 to 150 megawatts of wind, and they've done it, or they're doing it. And so the 2 years worth of data is probably pretty, you can get a good sense of what they're really going to do in 2 years. You get much past 2 years, things can change quickly. Mm-hmm. And so to your point of, are there a bunch of negative numbers? It would depend on the company. I suspect that MDU and Otter Tail probably don't have these kinds of excesses. They're relying, I know Otter Tail just signed a capacity agreement. MDU, as you saw in my testimony, just procured 16 megawatts of capacity through the MISO auction last month. So I would guess that theirs would look different.
Mm-hmm. How about the company's claim that if there's an increase in demand in this system, it's probably going to be happening everywhere, and that capacity market is going to evaporate really quickly. So that won't necessarily be a resource to turn to.
I think it's worth considering. you know, it's there aren't any guarantees in life. But one thing that I've noticed over my 50 years of living plus is that generally the lights have remained on through good and bad. And this company has done a fabulous job of keeping the lights on, and so have all the other electric companies across the land. They're full of engineers, and what do engineers do? They fix things, and they build things. And if we get in a situation where we need things fixed and built, they're as capable as anyone in the world. And so from a very high-level global perspective, I don't worry as much as some of the hand-wringing that maybe we see being done at NERC and MISO and NSP. I get it. They're tasked with making sure the lights stay on, and they've done a great job in the past. But I can't worry about that. That's their job.
One more question, I think, and then I'll rest for a bit. I was at the advisory board meeting recently for Xcel Energy in Fargo, and got to see a slide on their prices, and hadn't seen that slide before, actually. And it shows that their costs of electricity have actually gone up pretty significantly from second or so to 12th or something like that. And you know, as the advocacy staff, I'm sure you've been keeping an eye on that. What do you why do you think that is? Is it stuff like this? Is it Minnesota mandates? Is it just something that all the companies are going to have to do here before too long because of aging?
I think it's a number of things. One is that maybe NSP is a little ahead of the build-out of generation and transmission assets. They're ahead of MDU and Otter Tail. We know. I think that's public now, but we know MDU and Otter Tail need some generation, and so, you know, if it's a significant size, it'll be a significant impact to customers. And so I think it could be just the timing of asset deployment is part of it. Yes, I think some of the effects of Minnesota bleed over into North Dakota, and that's why I've tried to be as vocal and put my heels in the dirt and say and write this testimony the way I did.
Okay.
Right. But it does concern me. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Cedarquist and I talk about it regularly. They used to be one of the lowest cost utilities, and they're not anymore, and they're going the wrong direction, and they need to watch it.
Okay. All right. That's all my questions for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman?
I had a note to go to page 10 of your SIR rebuttal, and you already got there before I did, so I have one more question on that. What's your understanding of the status of Black Dog 6?
My understanding is that this commission has granted an ADP for Black Dog 6. Beyond that, I don't have any knowledge.
So you don't know if this displaces that idea or if it's even still on the table or anything?
Well, the Minnesota Commission has already approved that. They've approved it. We've approved it. So I assume it's going to go forward. I just don't know where it is in the planning stages.
Okay. When you talked about being agnostic regarding the type of power source, but is there not a need for a certain percentage of the energy to come from a spinning turbine?
Yeah, you can't have all intermittent. Yeah, I didn't mean to say that you could get by with just solar energy or just wind energy. It's a combination of various types. What I was referring to more is just the type of resource. Doesn't matter to staff whether it's sun, wind, solar, coal, gas, water. What makes the most sense? What's the cheapest way to provide reliable service to the ratepayers of North Dakota?
Except that enough of it has to be of a type that keeps the voltage up and that sort of thing.
You have to have that kind for certain.
You have, since I've been here, advocated for some NSP generation in North Dakota. Why do you want that?
Those are contained in about four paragraphs of my SIR rebuttal testimony, but generally speaking, I want that so that we have some control over our own generation facilities. The reason this came home to me, Commissioner, is that your staff went out and visited Otter Tail Power, and we went out to the Hoot Lake coal plant outside of town. And it's an old coal plant, but kept up marvelously. And I asked the plant manager there, if you had to, could you run this past 2020? Because that's when they're being forced to close it down. He said, yeah, we could run it probably another 10 years. That came home to me because I thought, oh, my goodness, we own 40% of this thing, and we cannot tell them to run it another 10 years because it's in Minnesota. We could tell Otter Tail, hey, run it and we'll take 100% of it. But the problem with that is the Minnesota government and the Minnesota environmentalists would descend on the place and they'd find a way to shut it down and we'd have 100% of nothing. And so That's really just our recent trip out to Otter Tail. On the way home, I'm thinking, oh my goodness.
Your parents would be proud of you the way you phrased that.
Oh,
but phrased another way, and this is the point I'm getting at with the question, is your concern at all involving economic development or trying to promote a certain policy that you feel strongly about, or is it about reliability for North Dakota consumers?
Cost reliable energy. My analysis never includes how many people it'll employ or any of that. I know Jack introduced me as director of economic development. It's actually director of economic regulation. I've always aspired to be the director of economic development, but I need the governor's nod on that.
I think that's a key point, and I wanted to bring it out because when we talk about maintaining an integrated system, isn't that a key realization in there that the things that North Dakota has promoted are, it seems to me, fall into one of two categories. They're either of the type like the reliability issues that were added in the fairly recent rate case that North Dakota consumers had to pay for themselves, or they're of a type that have to do with the reliability of the integrated system. And that to me is, or phrasing the question, is that not a lot different than something like we're talking about here with this Minnesota mandate, where it's basically a social policy where they're expecting other states to pay for their social policy?
I'm sorry, Commissioner. I don't know what the question is. Can you help me understand what the question is?
Do you see a distinction between some of the things that North Dakota has pushed for, like the generation, the gas plant generation, as opposed to the kind of thing that the Minnesota law is promoting here,
sure.
As insofar as how it relates to an integrated system?
Right. Well, that's a great question. Hadn't really thought about it. I'll say this, Commissioner, that I've told the company all from the very beginning when we started looking at Red River units 1 and 2 in Hankinson or wherever, that we are not interested in building those there if they're not least cost resources. And so I think that I've been faithful to my cause, faithful to what I'm suggesting here today, even when those resources are located in North Dakota. Does that
yep.
answer the question?
Yes, it does. Okay. Thank you. And lastly, when you talk about least cost planning, that's a generalization, right? Because using the example of the reliability things that this commission asked for, that really technically made it no longer least cost, but that's a generalization, right?
Right. Yeah.
Reliability
kind of
trumps
that. Ratepayers had to pay a little extra for additional reliability through our reliability efforts. Yes, that's true.
Thank you. No other questions.
Any follow up?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Simpson.
Just a couple of quick ones, and I'll also ask Mr. Hager if he wants to.
With permission, Zev. Only with permission.
What?
Only with permission.
Only with permission. That's correct. Just a couple of a quick follow up, Mr. Dealer. Commissioner Kalk talked about building the right size plant and the economics of that. You know, you do recognize that generally generation additions to a system are lumpy, in that they you can't actually hit your actual target. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. With respect to least cost planning, I just wanted to make sure you do agree that NSP at least has a legal obligation to meet the Minnesota Solar Energy Standard. We're legally obligated to do that.
Yes.
And to meet that, our proposal here is proposing three competitively bid what we believe are attractively priced projects to do so in a least cost manner. Do you concur with that?
I concur with that.
Okay.
But but it'd be to your advantage to assign all of those costs to Minnesota so that all of the solar RECs are accumulated in Minnesota.
And consistent with that, Mr. Diller, your testimony, and I believe this chart came from us, your testimony on page 10 had identified the excess capacity that you were talking about. And you do agree that based on our resource plan, we're going to have the need to build additional generation beyond 2023. Is that correct?
I do. I just ran out of space.
No, fair enough. My question to you is, do you believe that this excess capacity that we're building up now will impact our resource decisions in that future time?
Yes.
Okay. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Mike, I just have to ask at least one question because I now have honored guests observing, okay? My husband and my sister,
welcome.
Mary Pitley Angus. Anyway,
Mary.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Mary from previous meetings. Anyway, I do wonder, do you recall if ratepayers have paid for power purchase or fuel adjustment contract litigation costs when there were costs enforcing a contract?
I can't say for certain, but I would find it unlikely.
Okay.
Say it one more time.
Well, if a company that had something coming through the fuel adjustment had to litigate an issue, whether it was a power purchase contract or a coal contract, and the cost of that energy was coming through the fuel adjustment to begin with.
Yeah, I remember one instance of that, and there may have been others, but when MDU's Knife River that owned the coal plants at one time?
I yes.
think so. Knife River owned the coal plants, this is a long time ago, but they got in a dispute with Otter Tail Power over the cost of the fuel that was,
if
you recall.
You're on.
And as a result of that litigation, they managed to lower the overall cost of coal, I think it was like $1 a ton. And so while they spent a lot of money litigating that, I believe we authorized them to recover those costs through the fuel cost adjustment because it was fuel cost related.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, it would come to the commission. It wouldn't be automatic. It
no.
would come for approval, and if it had constructive benefit to ratepayers, it could be approved. Is that correct?
Yes, it has been in the past.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Sorry, I forgot my question right as I was going to ask it, Mike. It happens, right? It was going to go down the line about the whole used and useful that you and I pontificated about for the last decade. Not really, but and I'll set it up with Dave and I have spent a lot of time with SPP the last couple of weeks, and they added a new criteria to some of their transmission planning, and it's called public policy goals. And it's kind of a sneaky little way of what does that mean, but there's new costs that are now being brought into transmission. So, you know, we're fighting the same fight in transmission planning too, because what is a public policy goal? You build all these renewables that require transmission that maybe isn't there. So anyway. But
another phrase like that's public interest. I think we see public interest in some of NSP's filings before the Minnesota Commission. So similar.
You know. Sure. Well, and the backdrop or the follow-on to that point, I guess, is that when this commission started approving wind farms, didn't we make a major change from least cost planning? Because they were I haven't seen cases where, well, let me just let you answer the question. didn't we make a big policy change when we started allowing wind farms cost?
No.
Why not?
Well, I mean, we've been using least cost planning. Wind farms started coming in back in 2003. I mean, in full, we had some little bitty ones spread around the the estate, but really in full didn't start till about 2003. I think most.
Not most, I would agree, but I don't recall all.
Yeah. There was only one high-priced wind farm that the commission had in front of it, and we granted ADP on it, and thankfully Xcel Energy found a way out of it because of some birds or bats or bugs or something. I don't know. I don't recall the full story behind it. And so I'm fairly confident that most of the wind farms have been lease cost.
So you don't feel that we've the wind farm discussion has changed that? This is a functionally a different policy decision in front of us than the wind farms have been?
I think it is. I think this one's, I mean, we can't talk about the price of the energy of this, but it's, you know.
We
it,
can if you want. There's a procedure to do it, but.
That's okay. It's
in there.
I mean, I think Thunder Spirit is, they state in there, if we own this, it will cost 1.397 cents a kilowatt hour. I didn't do a lot of work on that one. 3 cent energy.
Okay.
You almost don't need to do an IRP when you're getting 3 cent energy. This is not 3 cent energy.
I'm just trying to clarify for the record the differences of what we may have done in wind to what might be here. And I recall, and I think all of the wind farms I've been involved in, there was a need for the energy. And this, there's not the need for the energy in your assessment. So that is different. Would you agree with that? I don't recall any wind farms where we've had, they didn't need them.
No, I'm just thinking we've had so many of them. I know that both Otter Tail and MDU buy a lot of energy on the market. It's why they're going to build something here not too far into the future. And so when you can lock in energy prices for 25 years at 3 cents, yes, the market price of energy off peak might be less than 3 cents, but it can very easily be above 3 cents during peak day times or during daytime hours. And so it's one of those deals where this is a huge opportunity to lock in. We're not exposed to the market energy any longer for at least the energy that we get from this wind farm.
From some of the wind farm. And then the last couple of points here is the I know this decision now is on ADP. And they'll at some point in time it'll come back for a rate case. I think whether we grant or don't grant the ADP, I think it comes back in a rate case at some time. How would you recommend we deal with that in that rate case? Is it a case where it's a used and useful discussion where we're North Dakota is using the power, so the company gets something back for it, or no? How would you recommend dealing with that at that point?
Well, yesterday the company met with staff, and they have indicated that they would like to work on a long-term solution. So I would say to that hopefully that will never come. We won't need to be arguing about it in their next rate case in 2020 or whenever it might be filed. We will have a solution, a long-term solution, to recognize the policy differences between the two states.
So how do we get what you said, your company, your discussion with the company is not included as a basis of anything in this record other than what you just said? How do we make that happen?
Well, by the fact that we are talking about all the things we're talking about in this proceeding, it has it has been an encouragement to the company to work out a long-term solution. The NSP doesn't want to hear this, but if you want to really stir them up and get them moving fast on a long-term solution, you could just deny the proxy price for the capacity of this thing. That would excite them more and encourage them more to resolve this matter. I don't know that I don't care as much about that as I do just a flat-out denial of the ADP.
But you anticipated my last question I wrote down.
Okay.
Should we deny this thing and button it up so tight we never see him again in this thing? I mean, you recommend don't do it, so why not take it to the next level?
Well, I asked Jack if he could just, if things looked like it was going our way, if we could just have a vote by the commission right now today, and that would be a quick and clear signal to the company and Minnesota Public Utility Commission. Zev's been twisting my arm between the discussions and breaks, and you know, we're no. North Dakota nice. You're North Dakota nice. It's hard to just say no and H no, and you can't have any. But his argument, Zev's argument, and I'll make it here for us, since you want to, is keep the door open. I guess Laura made that very right away. Keep the door open. If the economy changes, if we get to 2024 and we need capacity, North Dakota needs capacity. Do you want to say no to this in the event that maybe NSP, unlikely, but maybe NSP would be willing to then allocate capacity from this solar, these solar farms when we actually need it? So, in other words, they would forgo capacity payments until North Dakota needed it. There's problems with that, and we've got to work it out, and it'll take us a while, and we'll have.
Well, and just I guess never rule from the bench. Rule number one, right? Yeah. The maybe I'll take a break and talk with our general counsel. But in my mind, what I'm thinking through with this process is that if the ADP is granted, that's one thing. If it's not granted, there's got to be some caveat that makes that restack in this record, or we button it up tight. And that's where I guess the concern I'll come back with the general counsel is I don't think we can leave it completely open-ended. I want something in this record that if, depending on one of those scenarios it goes to, there's leverage that we would have as commissioners that they couldn't just walk away from the table. Mike Diller gets a new job tomorrow and leaves. Laura moves on to be the something else. And then we don't – this never gets dealt with again until a rate case gets filed in 20, whatever, and we're back to zero again.
We are already working on a long-term solution, but maybe this will help in your decision making. If you reject their ADP application, deny their ADP application, they will be required to pull out any energy costs out of the fuel cost adjustment. By doing that, by virtue of doing that, what you will have in North Dakota is energy that's priced at the system average cost. And is that right or wrong? It's I haven't even analyzed that yet. But that's what'll happen. You're not going to get energy for free.
Nor should you.
And nor should you.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any other.
Commissioner?
No other questions.
Mr. Hsu, anything else?
Your Honor. I know you said that NSP is required to fulfill their legal obligations, as opposing counsel said. Do you believe that – are you fairly confident that there are ways that they can satisfy that as well as stay true to North Dakota lease cost planning?
Say it one more time.
Are you confident that there are ways that NSP should be able to fill its legal obligations to Minnesota – as well as stay true to the North Dakota lease cost policy?
I do.
No. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Simpson?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Nothing, thank you.
Yeah, I did have a question. You just previously asked Mr. Diller the question relating to litigation costs and whether those can be passed on to ratepayers, and that was to be a late filed exhibit. Are you still asking for that? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
I am asking NSP
okay.
if they have ever, because
sure.
I'm recalling a little bit different scenario at the moment.
Okay.
Subject
we
to them
like
looking it up, and
just
they have people for
that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. We'd like to dot the I's and cross the T's on that.
Certainly. So. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Diller.
Thank you.
You can step down. Mr. Shude, anything further from advocacy staff at this time?
Your Honor, I think we just probably have a brief closing.
Okay. And Commissioner Kalki, you mentioned possibly taking a break. Do we want to do that before we go into closings or any rebuttal from the company?
I would just ask my colleagues, I guess, and Alana, is it – I think you understand the question I'm asking, Alana. Is it better to have you and I talk about this or give all three of us the same thing? The goal, I want to be able to get to one of those scenarios, and if we feel we have enough in the record, then we're done. If you don't, then maybe we need to figure out what you need to ask to get in the record.
Well, I think a break so that I could confer with perhaps Jerry and Pat might be helpful, but I was going back simply to the notice. I can put this much on the record. It's already on the record, and there's only one question in that notice, which means there's only one question that gets answered at this with this hearing, and that is, does it deserve, do you want to give this an advanced determination of prudence? That's the question. Anything else further would be sort of dicta or direction for future action, and other attorneys might have a different theory. That's my initial impression. Now, okay. Well, if you were to grant prudence, it's binding, quote-unquote, binding for rate-making purposes by law. If you grant it, again, you could say how that rate-making ought to play out. That's, you might be able to go there if you granted it. If you denied it, I think it's a denial. But we could talk a little more, and I'd like to talk with staff to gather our thoughts together before giving any further advice.
Is it okay with a quick break?
It's okay with me, but I would also ask Alana a question if I could.
Why don't we just break and you can ask separately?
Break, okay. Before we do, real quick, I just wanted to confirm, are there any members of the public here today that wish to offer any testimony, any public testimony from anybody? Okay. All right, well, is 15 minutes, is that sufficient for everybody to? All right, let's do 15 minutes. Mm-hmm.